Welcome to the Data Guru Podcast. We're your hosts, Scarlett Burks
and Laurel Wilhelm Volpe. We will trade off hosting duties this year to bring you a wide range of data experts discussing audience strategy, emerging trends,
and practical ways to boost campaign performance.
Hi, everyone, and welcome to the first Data Guru Podcast of the year. I'm your host, Laurel Wilhelm Volpe, and today I'm joined by Linda Harrison and Brady Gadberry to discuss data-driven marketing in 2023 and how some of the events of last year will likely shape advertising and marketing strategies going forward. But before we get started, let's do a quick round of introductions. Brady, will you kick us off?
Hi, Laurel. This is Brady Gadberry. I lead data products for Acxiom.
Cool. Linda, over to you.
So I'm Linda Harrison. You may have heard of me. And I am a senior director of data strategy at Acxiom.
Awesome. Thank you both for being here. And, you know, we're only doing audio. You can't see. We're all like kind of smiling and giggling at each other because we have worked together for a long time. So it feels a little odd to be introducing ourselves to each other, but that's all right. So here we're talking about 2023 and some informed crystal ball gazing. So before we, you know, begin the talk of the future, let's talk about 2022. Did anything happen that was in our industry, marketing and advertising, that was particularly surprising or you think is going to have a long-lasting or continued impact into 23? So who would like to start?
I'll start. If I don't want to talk about Twitter and having to bring your own toilet paper to work, I think the other surprising thing would be the contraction of the ad spend that's occurred over the last year and how I'm very hopeful that as the economy hasn't had more restrictions, we haven't had inflation hasn't really gone crazy except for the price of eggs for some reason and butter. But I think we're going to have an easing of it. It's going to take some time, but advertisers have to open up their wallets and they're going to start doing it slowly over time. I think it'll be over the next 3 months. That's my prediction.
Yeah, I totally agree with you there, Linda. I think when I look back at last year and think about trends that are going to carry over, I'm really struck by like the rise of, or the continued rise of kind of clean room technology. That, you know, this is a concept that we have used in industry for a very long time, and the rise of, you know, dedicated software and SaaS companies, particularly in this, I think really reflect the idea that people care about the security of their data. They care about being able to measure and that they want to be able to have control over the way, like these precious assets that is like the data about their customers is controlled. And yet they recognize that they have to be able to interact with other companies, and whether it's kind of in the publishing sphere where you're trying to reach people or other partners to make really good segmentation and really good understanding of their customer base. And so I don't know that I would speak to any particular clean room or any particular solution, but I think the fact that they're important overall is like it reflects these needs and desires by sharing, but some amount of control and access to things that, you know, everybody deems something worth safeguarding.
Acxiom has done kind of safe room things for as long as I've been at Acxiom, which is a very, very long time. I remember back in the 1990s. Yes, I was here in the 90s. Okay, the gig's up. But we would, that was back in the heyday when banks were merging, right? And they wanted to understand if I bought Bank ABC, how much overlap do I have with their existing customers? What's my net going to be? Or they wanted to look at, I'm a credit card company and I want to co-op market with this airline. How much overlap? What's my strength? What's my weakness? And that hasn't changed at all. That's still today a very popular use of a clean room. And then third-party data gets pulled into that mix to better understand the pluses, the minuses, the gee whiz, 1 + 1 does really equal 3. But these are my people.
Or there are people who are flying into Vegas, and I happen to own a resort in Vegas. Wouldn't it be nice to know when they're going to arrive so I could send them a marketing message? Just saying, possible use case. So it sounds like there's this rise of hopefully increase of media spend, but also new technology enabling some use cases that, you know, we've seen in the market for a very long time. That's a great segue to where I'd really like us to kind of spend some time today, which is data-driven marketing and advertising in 2023. We've all been around for a minute, despite our youthful appearance. So let's talk about what do we see? We've already kind of begun to go down this path with enabling or protecting consumer data and still enabling new use cases. So clean rooms, certainly a hot, hot topic, but what else do you both see?
I think the other thing I see that is, you know, clearly important in the space is a continued focus on first party data. In first party data, you know, I think is just like a fancy industry term for kind of the artifacts and the institutional knowledge about the relationship that a brand has with its fans and its consumers. And so I think that that's really important to recognize as, you know, nothing new again, but something that is increasingly important. And it's important because when we do look out at like, how do you take action in an effort to acquire new customers, or where do you take action to grow your relationship? The more that we see that those like venues and those channels are walled gardens, the more that you see that there isn't, as much as I think clean rooms are important, like the more that you see that people are less likely to directly share information with each other, then it becomes more and more important to like have your own true view of who your customers are, who are your best customers, the ability to like understand what makes them tick, both from kind of a qualitative sense and also kind of as a record of like what maybe they've bought from you in the past. But I think that's huge, and that we're going to continue to see people investing in methods and mechanisms to make it easy for them to record that relationship that they have with their customer.
Yeah, that's really interesting, Linda. In your role as the head of our data strategy group for clients, are you seeing an increase focused on first-party data and kind of acquisition strategies?
Yeah, acquisition is key, right? Especially in a contracting world. We want to find the right people for the right things. I can't say that enough. There's so many data sources now to help you better understand your existing customers and then build lookalikes or conversion models so that you are using the same acquisition strategy for your new customers as where you received them last, so that you're building the right things using solid demographic data, predictive data, and looking at that and then acting upon it. And I always say test, 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 because things change. Right? If we were still using the same models you built before COVID, they are probably not working today, right? That who I was before then is not who I am today. How I shop, where I shop, when I shop. Do I get it delivered? Did you get groceries delivered to your house before COVID?
No. And have you set foot in the grocery store since COVID? I mean, personally, but probably 75% reduction because it's so easy to get them delivered. That's just me. Yeah. So, you know, you've both brought up things that have been around for a while and yet are, you know, kind of coming into more of the spotlight now in the myriad trends pieces that are being posted now in January. One of the things that's come up are QR codes. That's been around for a while. Have you seen specific tactics like QR codes or others that are on the rise?
Yeah, so I talked to clients about QR codes, maybe not in the 90s, but certainly a long time ago, to say, hey, it's an easy way. Have it on your birthday signage or whatever, get somebody to sign up for the birthday of the month club, get a free ice cream cone or whatever it is, and build your first party database, right? Because so many industries don't have that capability very easily. Think about CPG, QSR. They have a very difficult time knowing who their customers are. So QR codes can help build that. And also just, they're kind of cool, fun technology now that everybody has a phone and a camera in their pocket.
Yeah, and I think that's the key, Linda, is, you know, I think why it's become so much more relevant through COVID and to now is people don't want to touch things. And so, you know, if you can aim your supercomputer that you carry around in your pocket, you know, with a camera on it, at a QR code and take you exactly to where you need to see, whether it's, you know, like to get to a menu at a restaurant or is to sign up for the free ice cream cone or to be in the birthday club, or to, you know, win a trip to Laurel's house for dinner, like whatever is the prize at the end, that's going to incent somebody, to see there's a good value exchange happening between the brand and the consumer for them to like build that relationship. I think that the reason that it's happening so much more is what you said, Linda, is that people are carrying around something in their pocket that makes it very easy to interact with that. And that's that the more it's native in our phones, the more that they're posted, creates like a reinforcing cycle of use. And it's not a weird thing. You don't have to have a separate QR reader. You don't have all of those things. And the most important word there is, I think, the most important word when it comes to everything data and everything customer relationship, and that's easy. As much as people value an interaction with a brand, we still on the brand side or on the ad tech side and the MarTech side really have to honor the fact that consumers and people are walking around with like more to do than just go like interact. And so we have to make it very simple and rewarding for, you know, to facilitate and get them to like actually engage with us. So, you know, making it simple, making sure there's value there, I think all that are like keys to like having a successful ability to build out kind of somebody's first party data.
So, you know, you brought up the phones that we have in our pockets and taking you exactly to where you want to go. And this blending of ease and convenience and where you are and the value that you get is bringing to mind a word that I just heard the other day, and now I can't get it out of my mind. And I hope everybody listening gets this earworm stuck in your head. If you don't know Physical by Olivia Newton-John, go look it up on YouTube, find the video. It is.
I don't think anybody who's listening to this is young enough that they don't know that. Laurel.
You'd be surprised. It's okay. Old. It's old. But anyway, headbands, you know, early 80s. Phygital, the blending of physical and digital. You know, some people are calling that the metaverse. I don't know. All of this started as we're talking about QR codes and building your first party data strategy and building your first party data asset. Is there, you know, what's the phygital side of this, that blending of the physical and the digital to come up with something new? I think the QR code menu is a great example.
Well, I think phygital shopping, right? So AI assistants for finding out what's going to fit me and look right on me is going to be a big boon to many of our retailing friends, because I will send my husband to go shop for me. He'll pick out 30 different outfits. I get to try them on at home, and then he returns all the ones I don't like. And that makes, I'm sure, the retailer crazy, because I don't like to try it on in the store. And now that I have moved to a smaller town, there's nothing in the store, and also hashtag COVID. So I'm buying more online and then having to return it, which is not great for the environment. So I think the whole phygital part of it will really help with that, and with people who care about doing the whole return and the reuse and the environmental aspects of having a 5 deliveries at my door every day.
Yeah. And I think it's the same thing, like I just mentioned before there, Linda, is like, there's value in that. And there's something that like your customers like really want, and it's tapping into a need or a desire there, and you're meeting it by, you know, creating an ability for them to actually have a sense of how would this look on me? How would this work for me? The first thing that I did like that, I remember, was, you know, looking at eyeglasses, and it was, you know, having like, what would this frame look like on my face versus that frame? I think that was my first experience with that reality. And I think it's great that, you know, our research shows that like when people experience something that's that augmented view or inside, that like their conversion rate of actually purchasing something is huge. So do I believe that we're one step away from being in a world where everyone like sits in a Barca lounger with goggles on and gloves and, you know, haptic response, and that we're all just going to float around in the metaverse and never leave our, you know, never leave our den? No. But do I think that there are like really really interesting ways to engage customers in a way that's like going to both kind of like entertain them, but also like give them the ability to do something that they couldn't otherwise do? Again, whether it's like remote or whether it's an experiential, like in store, any of those things that allows us to like tap into and like further that relationship between the brand and the consumer, and helps the consumer find the brands that they care about, I think is really important. I think that's like, that's just like critical for people to operate going forward, is to have that strong relationship on both sides of that equation.
My favorite tool now that I show everyone, and I've been using it for a couple of years, but it's amazing how many people haven't used it, is Google Lens, to just show, especially seniors that I hang out with, look, you can have it take a picture of anything and figure out what it is, where you can buy it. What plant is this?
That's one that I've used. My not particularly green thumb, you know, and I go outside and wonder like, why does that look brown? I don't even know what this is. And the ability to, again, pull the supercomputer out of my pocket, aim it at the shrubs in the front yard, and know, you know, what kind of fertilizer I ought to be going and picking up at the hardware store and coming back, so that, you know, I don't look like I live in the desert, is really amazing, I think. And so like, I just totally agree with you, Linda, there.
I love that. See, I have an app for what plant is this and what should I do? And I'm like, ooh, that's $60. I don't need to spend on that subscription. So see, I learned something new there. I was not aware of, but I could do that. All right. I love this. I think this has been really valuable, and just some ideas that we're giving folks, I hope, you know, on how to blend the physical, the digital, and how to create value for your customers. I love that. Thank you both. I know we're getting close to time, so I've got one final question for you, and it's actually a fun one. First podcast of the year, so let's talk New Year's resolutions. I don't want to know what yours are. This is not an accountability group. Just want to know, do you make them or not? Why or why not?
I don't typically, but this year I typically don't do anything for Lent. A friend of mine called Laurel did this last year, or maybe it was the year before, and she wrote thank you notes to people, and I loved it, and I still have it. So I'm going to be more grateful and show that.
I think that's great. I think I have a note in a drawer somewhere myself. I think that's great. I don't typically make resolutions. I think big change is hard, and the more pressure we put ourselves on to like have it tied to, you know, some single like kind of big bang event, kind of sets an unreal expectation. And that I also think that, you know, on the flip side of that, like, you know, there's, if we have things we ought to address, we shouldn't wait until, you know, January to do it. We ought to, you know, decide, like live an examined life. And if we see something and understand something, whether it's from ourselves or feedback from our friends or, you know, our family, that we ought to address it whenever it is. What about you?
So that intervention we had with you really did yes.
Right when we sat him down. Yeah. I mean, we won't talk about that now.
What about, well, not today. But Laurel, what would yours be? Do you resolute?
I am irresolute. I am also in the no New Year's resolutions camp. I agree that sometimes we can put, you know, some of us, especially more than others, perhaps put a lot of pressure on ourselves. And so I would much prefer to have a goal that I'm working to achieve, but that is not, yeah, just not the New Year's resolution, but more of an examined life. I like that term, Brady. I'm totally going to steal that. So you've been warned.
Well, I mean, at least like Laurel, you can continue to be the example for us, whether it's like being grateful and letting people know it, or like when you decide to like stop eating things that are the color orange or whatever it is, that, like these things, like, you know, the ability to actually like make a change that requires some kind of steadfastness and do it. You know, you're not only a podcast host, but you are an example to all of us.
Oh, thank you.
You said this was the lighthearted part, right?
Oh, it's a good thing we're only doing audio because I'm blushing. All right. Yeah. So let's wrap this up. So thank you both for joining me today. I think this has been a great conversation, and many thanks to all of our listeners. We hope you found this helpful. And as always, if you have any questions or would like to learn more about how to get fidgetal or other burning data questions, you can drop us a line at info@axiom.com, and we will see you next time.